Hello, I'm Oliver Condy, the editor of BBC Music Magazine, and welcome to the BBC Music Podcast. You can buy a copy of the magazine at your local newsagents or download our app to your iPad, Kindle Fire or Android tablet. And for the latest music news and more, head to our website at classical-music.com. This week, we've brought together members of the BBC Music Magazine team for First Listen, a monthly slot where members of the magazine editorial team chat about and rate an important new release. With me today in the BBC Music studio are Jeremy Pound, the deputy editor, and Rebecca Franks, our reviews editor.
Hello.
Hola.
This month, we've been listening to a recording of French orchestral music with a distinctly Spanish theme, as you might have guessed from Jeremy's greeting, by Chabrier, Massenet, Ravel and Debussy, performed by Les Siècles under the baton of François-Xavier Roud. But is this recording a case of olé or oh no? To open proceedings, let's hear an extract from the opening track, Chabrier's exuberant España. That was an extract from Chabrier's España. Very much a traditional portrayal of Spain, isn't it, Jeremy? Really very much the sort of the Spanish dances, the sunshine, the flavours.
Exactly. Within this disc, you get two kind of looks at Spain, actually. Although the composers are only kind of divided by about 50, 60 years apart, they write in two different styles. Chabrier's España and Massenet's Suite from the Ballet of Le Cid both kind of have a sort of idealised version of Spain. They're trying to portray Spanish themes. It's how a Frenchman might see Spain. Whereas Ravel and Debussy is kind of Spain in their language. It's much more sort of impressionistic. It's sort of an overall image. And so, yes, with the Chabrier and the Massenet, actually, you have castanets and things like that. You can actually clearly hear the dance rhythms. And as you say, a lot of it is very sunny. Actually, all four works on this disc are quite sunny in their funny way. But the Chabrier and the Massenet in particular kind of really evoke the Spanish sunshine and the dances and the people.
It's almost as if they've gone on holiday there and have come back very enthusiastic, as anyone does when they've gone on holiday to Spain and come back and say, I've got to portray this. You know, I went to a flamenco bar or I saw dancers in the streets and that kind of thing. It's very much a party atmosphere, isn't it?
It is, and actually he wrote about the dances that he'd seen, and there's this lovely sort of letter A's describing it, seeing all the different regional Spanish dances and then hearing the bells and seeing the city before him when he was in a tower under a snow-white moon, I think he says. So it's very much this kind of idyllic holiday feel. And I suppose almost there was this kind of innocence at discovering all this stuff for the first time that, and actually now maybe it's sort of become, these have become clichés really almost of Spain, but at the time there was that kind of real sense of discovery.
Yeah, I mean, France had a sort of very special relationship with Spain, not least 60 years before Napoleon invading Spain. I mean, the French and the Spanish have been very much at odds, but have had this connection over the years. And I think that's borne out by Jules Massenet's wonderful four-act opera, Le Cid, which really does, again, much like the Chabrier, bring out those very exuberant sort of Spanish rhythms and harmonies.
Yes, I agree. And what we get in the Ballet of Le Cid, it's actually, because it's a French grand opera, which traditionally have a sort of a dance move slap bang in the middle of them. And the ballet we have here on this disc is from the second act of Le Cid. And as you say, it's like a sort of a tour of Spain in dance. You have Castellan from Castile, obviously, and then you have Andalus from Andalusia, Aragonese, Obard, Catalan, Madrilen, and Navarre. So that takes you all the way from Andalusia in the south up to Navarra, which is actually part of the Basque Country up in the north. And the characters of the dances are very, very different. It's quite interesting that Catalan is quite a sturdy, strict, almost kind of to the point dance, which is how you actually imagine imagine the Catalans these days. I say this as someone who has a Catalan sister-in-law. She'd probably tell me off for saying this, but they are quite a business-like type. And you don't have that sort of lazy, hazy feel, which you do very much with Andalusia, for instance.
For me, this is the real highlight of the disc, actually. I think they really, the orchestra really, really shines here, brings out all the fun and the colour and the sort of atmosphere of each of these dances. They're live performances, so you do get a bit of coughing and spluttering, and it is a bit noticeable in here, but it doesn't really detract from these.
What I really like in this suite is that actually the track we've chosen next, which is Madrilène, which is from Madrid, the capital, of course, in which you get two different feels within the one dance. So you have the sort of the sultriness to begin with, which is graced by a lovely cor anglais solo, which actually reminds me a little bit of the central movements of the Concerto de Aranjuez from much later. And then halfway through, it kind of moves into a much friskier kind of movement as sort of the city comes to life. It's quite fun.
I think what's quite noticeable about certainly that second extract is, although it is Spanish dances, Spanish rhythms, it really does have that 19th century French flavour. You can really hear the Offenbach shining through, which I think is quite amusing, actually. What I think is fascinating, though, is the fact that this orchestra is playing what they say are authentic instruments. And you can hear the flute very much in there. Of course, the metal body, the metal bore flute, being very much a sort of a French development of the 19th century. And, you know, these instruments being very much typical of the kind of instruments that would have been used. François-Xavier Rode claims at the time.
It's interesting, actually, in the booklet notes, they have a very comprehensive list of the instruments they're playing, who's made them, their dates and everything. So you can really... you can get stuck in there. But at the beginning, when they're sort of talking about it, there's not actually a huge amount of elaboration on exactly why they've chosen the ones they have. And it just says, the musicians carried out restoration work to rediscover the original colours of the works. And I'm not entirely clear if they had to restore the instruments or if they had to go back to the original scores. It was actually what that involved. And it'd be quite nice to know a little bit more about that, really.
I mean, aside from the strings being obviously gut strings, I have to say that to my ears, the instruments themselves haven't developed a huge amount up to today. And there isn't, I mean, the orchestral playing is absolutely superb, but I have a feeling that it would have been just as superb, just as captivating and just as smooth had they used entirely modern instruments. I mean, a lot of people are using violins anyway from the 18th century, so I can't see...
You have to be pretty sharp-eared, actually, to spot that they're playing on period instruments typed in this recording. I've got a recording of very similar repertoire conducted by Artolfo Argenta, which uses modern instruments. And I was playing them yesterday evening, kind of contrasting the two, and actually at times there really is very little difference in texture between the two.
And actually François-Xavier Rode, he kind of says that the instruments sort of dictate finding the tone and the tempo and the balance, which I'm sure is true because presumably there are sort of different limitations and considerations. But also actually I think it's just this music finds its own tempo and finds its own balance in a way.
I think it's a slight distraction. I think this is music beautifully played and the programme is absolutely beautifully put together, as we'll go on to discover. And I think, you know, this is something that we don't really need to know huge amounts about.
I agree. I bet if you blind played this to most listeners, they wouldn't be able to tell you that it was period instruments, being really honest.
I think I agree.
So to the second half of this disc, the Ravel and the Debussy. Rebecca, perhaps you can tell us a little bit about the Ravel.
So we have Ravel's Alborada del Grazioso, which was originally written as a piano version in 1905 and then later orchestrated in 1918. There's quite a nice quote Fire said that of the orchestration, there shines an ingenuity and virtuosity that have never been surpassed, because Ravel had this wonderful ear for orchestration and bringing out all the different colours and different sort of textures.
And this really is about the tastes and the smells of Spain as much as it is about the dance rhythms and the looks and the colours. You know, this is basically an all-encompassing three-dimensional impression of Spain, isn't it, really?
It is. It's also very remarkable for its wonderful instrumental solos as well. He picks out instruments here and there and everywhere and kind of gives each instrument its moment in the sun. That's also what he does in a very more obvious way in Bolero, of course, where he actually has them playing turn by turn. Here, each one is pulled out, though, and you kind of hear it, and then it kind of goes back into the texture, as you say. And it's much more of a generic picture of Spain, as you say, rather than a sort of trying to pick out exact scenes.
But obviously, he was one composer on this disc that actually had sort of Spanish roots, because he was born in the sort of Basque area, and his mother was Basque. But also, I think it's quite interesting that for him, Spain was sort of always this source of inspiration from quite early on, in the same way that actually sort of ancient music was as well. So it's sort of one of his many inspirations.
And it's thrillingly played, actually. We're going to hear the last minute or so of the Ravel, which reminds me, I don't know if it reminds you, but of La Valse very much.
I have written that down on my notes too.
Yep.
I always love the way that Ravel ends these kind of pieces in a kind of frenzy. It's very...
he writes a good ending.
Demented.
He does, yeah.
In many ways. And then we move on to Debussy's Iberia in three movements. Very much, again, the sort of smells of Spain as much as the dances. This is very sort of atmospheric, very beautifully scored, slightly simpler than the Ravel, I think.
It is. You do get themes which kind of crop up in all three movements. There is a kind of thread between the three. What you really get is two slightly faster movements, livelier movements, one and three, and then the second movement is a classic central slow movement, and that's the sort of the real heart of the work. It's Le Parfum de la Nuit, which is sort of that sort of aromatic feel you get on a very warm Spanish night, where Debussy is in his element as a sort of picture painter. It's rather good.
I'm not sure I could quite put my finger on exactly why, but I didn't feel that this was the strongest of their performances on the disc. It somehow didn't leave such a lasting impression as the other three. I don't know if it's because you need to have more imagination with the colour to sort of conjure up this world, perhaps. I don't know, that's just a personal reflection.
It's quite difficult. It's very difficult music to play because it's quite static sometimes in its writing, particularly as Debussy's waiting for the sun to come up, for example, both in this work and in La Mer. I think it's quite difficult to have a sense of direction in something that is waiting for events to happen. So I think we should hear an extract from Le Parfum de la Nuit, the smells of the night, the perfumes of the night. Thank you. So that was an extract from Le Parfum de la Nuit, Debussy's Iberia. And it's now time for the scores. Jeremy, out of 10.
I'm going to give it 9 out of 10. I absolutely adored the Chabrier, the Massenet and the Ravel. The Debussy, I didn't find I was wallowing in it quite as much as I'd like to. But that was a small caveat. 9 out of 10. Great disc.
Rebecca.
8 out of 10 from me. I really enjoyed it. Fantastic performance of the Massenet, I really thought. And yes, I will be listening to it again.
And I'm also going to give it 8. I thought that, I mean, it was a tremendously well-performed recording. Actually, to hell with it, I'm going to give it 9. I thought it was a wonderful disc. As I said earlier, I think the period instrument thing is a little bit of a distraction, but I thought the program was so magical, and I loved the progression from the Chabrier to the Debussy. So yes, and the recording quality I thought was very fine, despite it being a live recording. So that's a 9 out of 10 for me. So that gives us an average of 8 2/3. So 8 2/3 for this recording of Chabrier, Massenet, Ravel, and Debussy. So that brings us to the end of this month's First Listen. Join us next month when we'll be getting together once more to discuss another major new recording. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Thank you for listening to this BBC Music Magazine podcast, which was produced in our Bristol studio by Jack Fletcher. For more of our podcasts, visit our website at classical-music.com or simply head to iTunes.